hen itself is not called oichel. The hen itself is like a machine. And when the egg comes out, that's considered a situation of noilad gomer. I have a machine, part of the machine converted to become food. That's considered a form of noilad gomer, something that wasn't in the state of food at all on Erev Yontif. And that's a dispute between Beisham and Besuvah, whether you hold from muktzah or not. If you hold from muktzah, you're not allowed to eat it. If you don't hold from muktzah, you are allowed to eat it. The Gemara says the other Amoraim would not accept the view of the first Mandoma. Who was that? Rav Nachman. The other Amoraim disagreed with Rav Nachman because they feel that even Mandel, Eislei Muktzeh, Eislei Noilad. This is Noilad Gomor. The dispute between Rav Shimon and Rav Yudin, and Beisham and Misilo, Maser HaShabbos, whether you hold from Muktzeh or not means that you have to have Hachonas HaBalim for the Ochlim and the Kelim, or I say that all the Ochlim and Kelim are Mucham Mealeim. But if you have something that came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, like the Rebbeinu Shlomo caused the man to fall down in the middle of Shabbos. And in the beginning of Shabbos it didn't exist at all in the form of food. Or if, let's say, a guy will take boards of wood and he'll make a table out of it in the middle of Shabbos. Then everybody will agree that that's Muktzeh. It came into existence as a kli, or as ochel, in the middle of Shabbos, and you can't say that it was Mucha Me'ela from before him. So that's why the other Amoraim don't accept the view of Rav Nachman. Then we had the second, so we have to go on to another interpretation. Then we had the second interpretation was Rabbah. Rabbah says, no, we're talking about Tanagolus or Medes, Lachila. We're talking about a hen that the Balabas plans to eat. He's going to shecht it today, tomorrow, either at Yom Tov or Mitzvah Yom Tov. Within a few days he plans to shecht the hen. So the hen is considered Oichel. And when the Beitzah comes out, it should also be Oichel. So it's Oichel coming from Oichel, so that can't be considered Muktzah. That's not Noilad. It's like if uchlo diifros. That's like if you take a big loaf of bread and you slice a piece of chalif in the middle. So that's not called noilad. That before it was a loaf and now it's a slice. That's not considered a panim kadoshes b'ol time. It's not an issue of muktzah at all. It's a completely different issue. So Rabbi explains what's the issue. It's a din of hachonah. What's a din of hachonah? So we explain to set the table. To set the table on Yom Tov for Matzoy Yom Tov, but to set the table on Shabbos for Matzoy Shabbos, or to get dressed for a party or whatever, to prepare, to roll the Sefer Torah on Shabbos for the Kriyas HaTorah for Monday or something like that, that's only forbidden by the Rabbanim. To prepare from Yom Tov to Chol, or from Shabbos to Chol, that's only awesome by the Rabbanim. But to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos, or Shabbos for Yom Tov, that's forbidden by the Torah. We would have said, it doesn't make any sense. So Rabbi, what's that possible? That's the din of hachana de Rabbah. That's the first half. That grada doesn't appear in our Gemara. That's in the Gemara in Erevin. That Rabbah's din of hachana has two parts. Number one, it's forbidden to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos, or Shabbos for Yom Tov. We're not talking about doing a malach. We're not talking about cooking food on Yom Tov for Shabbos. No malach at all. Just to set the table on Yom Tov for Shabbos. The Rabbah says that's forbidden min atar, to do an act of hachana. Although to do an act of hachana from Shabbos to Chol or Yom Tov to Chol is only awesome to Rabbanon, but on Yom Tov to Shabbos, Yom Tov, that's awesome min atar. And number two, that's what our Gemara is discussing, if you have some food or some kli that you want to use when you have Yom Tov next to Shabbos, or Shabbos next to Yom Tov, you want to use it on the second day, and it was Huchan yesterday for today, then it's awesome in our Torah to use that food or to eat the food or to use the kli on the second day. So Rabbi claims that that's what's going on in the Mishnah. If you have a Yom Tov next to a Shabbos or a Shabbos next to a Yom, means a Yom Tov falls out either on Friday or on Sunday, it would be forbidden in our Torah to eat the beitzah that was born on the second day, that the hen lays on the second day, because since the hens lay eggs every other day, so we assume that the egg that's laid on the second day was nigmara, the beitzah was nigmara on the first day. And even though the hen didn't violate an aver, the hen is not Jewish, and the Rebbeinu Shlom didn't violate an aver, and I certainly didn't do anything. What, it's my fault that the hen prepared the egg? So nobody did any aver over here. It doesn't matter. Rabbi says that the prohibition, there's one prohibition to do an act of hachana, but that we're not talking about anybody violating the act of what, the chicken violated hachana? Doesn't matter. And then there's another din unrelated to that violation. Even if the one who made the hachana is an animal, it's a natural process that the hachana occurred. It's forbidden to eat on the second day the food that was huchan on the first day. And he said, there is...
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were a chef to sit in front of the egg inside, there would be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not the egg came before you checked, is there a problem?
The Gemara says there's not. The Gemara says there's not a problem. So Tosfos says to Akasha, but if you would have waited 5 minutes later, it would be called huchan improperly from yesterday. So because you shechted the chicken, because you shechted the hen 5 minutes earlier, but it still had a hachana yesterday. So Tosfos claims, in the bottom Tosfos claims, that the only time it constitutes an improper hachana is if lebesof the hen really lays the egg. And I say that the Gemara was yesterday for that egg that the hen lays today. But if the hen never lays the egg, it just stays inside the body, and then you shech the hen and you find the egg inside. That's not called. It's not mukta. It starts off, it's forbidden to eat the egg because it's, it had an improper hachana. And mele, if you have food that you're not allowed to eat, and the mele becomes mukta.
But according to Abba, therefore, the egg lays.
If you have, the behemoth can eat the food on Yom Tov, but usually you don't feed, we discussed last week, if you have raw potatoes in the refrigerator. So if it's Yom Tov and you're allowed to cook raw potatoes, so the raw potatoes are not mukta. If it's Shabbos, and normally you don't eat raw potatoes, so then it says in Shulchan Aruch, based on a Rashba, the Magen Avraham quotes in the name of the Rashba, that the raw potatoes are mukta mamish, and you're not even allowed to move it, letzarf gufa, letzarf mekomo. Even though you want to rearrange all the pots in the refrigerator, it's forbidden to move it. What you can do is, if the raw potatoes are in the way, so you can put a pot in and push the potatoes like this. That's called tilta mukta min atzad, letzarf gava mukta, because it's in the way. You can do that. But you can't pick up the potatoes biodime and move it. Why is it mukta? But potatoes are meichel behema. So the answer is, yeah, it's meichel behema if you plan to feed it to the behemas. Whatever is meichel behema is not mukta. But if I have raw potatoes, which I don't plan to feed to my behemoth. In Europe, when they had a farm, so they used to feed the behemoths raw potatoes. But if you live in a house, you don't live on a farm, so you're not going to feed the raw potatoes to your dog or to your cat. You plan to cook those potatoes and eat it yourself. And on Shabbos, you're forbidden to cook the raw potatoes. On Shabbos, it's not considered oichel at all. So the same thing over here. If you have the beitza, the hen lays an egg on Yom Tov. So if you plan to feed the egg to the behemoths, so it's not hate, then it's not mukta. And the egg is not mukta. There's no avera to feed the eggs to the behemoth. But if you're interested in eating the egg, usually you don't give raw eggs to the dogs and the cat.
People do.
Let's say it's Yom Tov. Let's say it's Yom Tov and you can cook it. Let's say Yom Tov is on Sunday and the egg is laid, the hen lays the egg on Sunday and it was Nigmar on Shabbos. If you plan to feed the egg to a behemoth, it doesn't take. It's not mukta. There's no violation. But if you want to eat the egg yourself, so you're not permitted to eat that egg because it had an improper hachana. And then memela, once you have an egg that you can't do anything with, so memela becomes mukta. Why is it mukta? But you can feed it to the animals. But you don't plan to feed it to the animals, like the raw potatoes on Shabbos. You don't plan to feed it to the animals. You plan to wait till after your... But you're not allowed to, because it had an improper hachana. Yeah. The din of hachana only applies as far as suda sa'odam. A Jewish person has to eat sudas on Yom Tov. And even though, strictly speaking, the mitzvah of sudas is probably all over the Rabbana, but whatever food he eats on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's a mitzvah. It's a kiyama mitzvah. Even though he's not mukhiyah to have a sudim in a Torah, whatever he eats constitutes a kiyama mitzvah v'ineg Yom Tov. So you're only permitted to eat on Yom Tov food that had a proper hachon. If it had an improper hachon, it's also to eat it on Yom Tov. The behemoth doesn't have any mitzvah. As far as behemoth is concerned, it's not Yom Tov. Rashi faked our kasha here. Rashi and Tosfos both say the same kasha and the same teretz. You're not allowed to eat an egg that was nigmar on Shabbos. You're not allowed to eat it on Yom Tov. That Yom Tov and Shabbos next to each other. You're not allowed to eat the egg that was laid by the hen on the second day. That was prepared by the inside of the hen on the first day. So how can you ever eat any eggs that are born on Sunday, that are born on Metzoy Yom Tov? Why not say it was always Huchan on Yom Tov, Huchan on Shabbos? So Rashi and Tosfos answer, that's not a kasha. Sudas chol, the food that you eat on the weekdays, doesn't need any hachana. There's no mitzvah to eat sudas chol. You have to eat in order to survive, but it's not considered a kiyama mitzvah to eat a suda on the weekdays. So it doesn't bother me if I had an improper hachana from Shabbos to the weekday, Yom Tov to the weekday. It doesn't count at all. But suda Shabbos or suda Yom Tov requires hachana. So if, as far as a Jew is concerned, if a Jew is eating it, if a goy eats it, gives it to her, I can let a goy eat the egg. I can let the behem eat the egg also. But if I don't plan to give it to a goy, I don't plan to give it to the behemoth. I plan to eat the egg myself. And on Yom Tov, I can't eat it. So I'm going to wait till after Yom Tov in order to eat it. So that's why it's mukta, because I have an egg that I absolutely can't use today.
So according to Abba, the egg is comes out on Shabbos, but out of Yom Tov.
Oh, so that's the Gemara's kasha. Shabbos the Alma Tishteri. A plain old Shabbos should be mutter, and a plain old Yontif should be mutter because it was completed on Erev Shabbos Erev Yontif. So the Mishnah doesn't seem to say like that. The Mishnah talks about a Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif. Doesn't say it's a Beitza Shenolda B'Yontif that was on Matzoi Shabbos or Shabbos that's on Matzoi Yontif. So the Gemara says you're right. Rabbi holds that the Iker is that their ice only applies when you have Shabbos or Yontif as Muchum Zelazet. But if you have a Yontif, the Alma, a plain Yontif or a plain Shabbos, not next to Shabbos or Yontif, then it's only awesome with the Rabban on the Beitza Shenol, the Gzeira Mishum, a Shabbos next to a Yontif. That's how Rabbi interprets the reason for the mission. It's Rabbi's Pshat.
But then we have to say that the original
Rabbi thinks that it is their ice. The Gemara says on the next daf, according to Rabbi, it's an Issa Derais. Right, he quotes a pasuk. He could have said the pasuk is an Asmachta, but the Gemara says explicitly on that Gimelon days, we're going to go into that at length. The Gemara says on the... So then it's Shach to make a Gzeira. Otherwise, if it's only an Issa Derabbanon, when Shabbos is next to Yontif, so it will be a Gzeira to a Gzeira. So the Gemara says that Rabbi's din is a real Issa Derais. The other Amoraim don't hold from Rabbi. There is no din, not minatera, not min the rabbanon, hakona the rabbi. That's how the Gemara says on the next dot. There are four different reasons for the Mishnah. So the Gemara says nobody holds like Rav Nachman's interpretation, because Rav Nachman claims that the machlekes Rav Yudin and Rav Shimon, but he holds from Muktzah, not only applies by the taste of the good dishes in the cabinet and by the ice cream in the freezer that you set aside for the bar mitzvah party. That's ochel, but you didn't have hachanas ha-bailim, you didn't have hachanas ha-gavre. It's mucham le'elov, that's the way we normally know. No, Rav Nachman says wrong. Even if the food came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, or the kli came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, or the middle of Yom Tov, it'll also be a dispute. So the Gemara says the other Amoraim think that is wrong. That if you have noilat gomur, something came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, middle of Yom Tov, everybody would agree that it's muktzah. Even Rav Shimon would agree that it's forbidden to eat it. So if it's a tarnegolas on medes, legavu beitzim, the beitzah that comes out should be noilat gomur, and everybody should agree that it's muktzah. That's why nobody holds like Rav Nachman. They hold at that point is wrong. Then the Gemara says, the other Amoraim think that Rabbi is wrong. They don't believe in the whole instance, they don't believe in the whole din of hachana. They think there is no such din. And then we had a third and a fourth reason. That's what we're up to now. The Gemara gives a third time and a fourth time, a fourth interpretation for the Mishnah. The third reason the Gemara gave is on the second line from the bottom of that base on the base, Rav Yosef Amar. Rav Yosef says the reason for the Easter of the Beitza is Yishum Peres Hanoshim. There is a din that you're forbidden to rip off fruits from the tree on Shabbos and Yontif. It's a malach of kotzer. Not allowed to rip off branches, not allowed to rip off flowers. Not only not allowed to rip off, the Mishnah says that you're not permitted to lean on a tree, or even as you walk in the street, let's say to hit the bushes or something, to move the bushes because it's considered muktzah. Because you're not allowed to break off a branch, so the Chacham said it's forbidden even to touch the branches, even to lean on a tree or something like that. The Gemara even says if you have a hammock that's tied on between two different trees and you're not touching the trees at all, you're just laying on the hammock, so you're not permitted to rest on the hammock because the hammock is supported by the tree. Unless you have hooks that are screwed into the tree, and then the hammock is hanging on the nails, not hanging onto the tree directly. So that the Gemara calls in the end of Erev, and that's Tzidei Tzedodim. You're not permitted to climb on the tree, Gzereshem or Yitlosh. You may break off a branch. You're not allowed to use the hammock that's tied onto the branches because it's attached to the tree. But if the hammock is attached to a nail, which in turn is attached to the tree, that's really twice removed. So then the Gemara says that it's permissible. So the Gemara says in order to make sure that people don't break off branches and don't pull off fruits from the trees, they made Gzera Derabbanan, that word, that even if the fruits fall off from the trees on their own, Peres Hanoshim, the apples or the pears fell off on Shabbos or Yom Tov on their own, you're not allowed to eat those apples or pears. So the Gemara sounds like it's saying over here, in order to make sure that people don't violate the Yisrael Peres Hanoshim, so Rav Yosef says that's why they see a little extended it. They made another gzera, you're not permitted to eat the Beitza Shenolda, the Shabbos or the Yontif, because if you allow the fellow to eat the egg that was born on Shabbos or Yontif, he may think that he's allowed to eat the pears that fell off from the tree. And Vasu is, what, Minatari, you're permitted to eat the pears that fell off from the tree? No. The If the leaf, the pears that fell off from the tree, this may lead him to break off the branches from the tree. So the Gemara says, but that's a gzeira on a gzeira. You have no right to make a gzeira. You have no right to forbid something because you're afraid someone's going to violate an issur d'rabbanan. The Torah says, the Torah gives the Chachamim the authorization to make gzeiras d'rabbanan. Right, Rashi quotes over here, Shmartim es mishmarti, asum mishmeris and mishmarti. That's the pasuk quoted by the Gemara Nivamas on Daf Chaf Aleph. It gives the koyach, it gives the reshus to the Chachamim to institute gzeiras d'rabbanan. Otherwise, it will be a violation of Bal Tosif. What right did the Rabbanan have to add on to the Din HaFer? Says in the Chumash, that this constitution cannot have any amendments. Not like the United States Constitution. They can take off, they can add on, they can change it, whatever they want. Here the Torah says there are 613 mitzvahs, all of them are harisef in the manu and legroy. You can't add on any mitzvah, you can't take off any mitzvahs. Back in the Chachamim have all these gzeiras de Rabbanan, have all the mitzvahs de Rabbanan. So the Gemara explains in Erevin that the Chumash itself authorizes the Rabbanan to make a gzeira. What is that? A shmartem es mishmarti. Asum mishmaris ni mishmarti. If the Chachamim are afraid that someone's going to violate an aveira, so then they're authorized to institute a gzeira de Rabbanan. But that's only if you have a milsa de shchiche. If they think that if you'll allow, let's say, if you'll allow people to blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, for sure someone's going to forget and carry. It happens all the time on Yom Kippur. Someone always forgets and carries a matzah to shul. Whenever a yontif falls on Shabbos, somebody always forgets. We're talking about religious people who normally wouldn't carry on a Shabbos. So there's always, in every community, there's always some religious Jew who forgot and carried his talis, or carries a matzah to shul, or something like that. So the Chachamim cut down whatever they could. But they said, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we forbid everybody from blowing shofar, because we're afraid that someone's going to forget and carry the shofar. When Sukkot falls on Shabbos, we forbid everybody from shaking the lulav, because someone's going to forget and carry the lulav. They really should have forbid saying piyutim also. They should have said you're not allowed to daven either. But Bizman HaGemar, they had no sidurim. They used to daven bal peh, so there was nothing to carry. If they would have lived today, they would have made exeri. You're not allowed to daven. They would have said the chazan should daven and be mitzi everybody. You should listen. Nobody should daven in order to make sure you don't carry a machzor. But Bizman HaTaran, there was no machzor. They used to daven bal peh.
What is the chilek between a mile?
That's Tesis has a big problem on that. How come if you have a bris on Shabbos, why do you allow the bris? Why aren't you afraid that the moel is going to carry? Okay, that's one of the answers. The Rishonim weren't. Rishonim gives seven answers. The Rishonim gives seven answers on that question. It's another answer. There are a lot of answers. No, the kasha is an eisen kasha. All the Rishonim asked the question. And there's no one answer. They give seven answers on that kasha. The very beginning of Megillah, Dav Dalet, so Tosis gives a few in the Meiri, there Megillah rattles off all the seven answers one after the other. So one of the answers is, like he mentioned, that the only time you're afraid someone's going to carry is, if it's Tkiah Shofar, the Hakol Chayovim B'Tkiah Shofar. All the Jews in the world have to blow Shofar. So if you have millions of Jews have to blow Shofar, so for sure we're afraid that someone's going to carry the Shofar. But how many brisim do you have on any one given Shabbos? Not so many brisim. So you're not afraid that there's going to be a chilul Shabbos. That's one answer. Another answer is that, what are you afraid of? You want to forbid milah on Shabbos, but it says explicitly in the Chumash that you do a bris milah even when it falls out on Shabbos. It's another answer. Then Rosh Hashanah give more answers. They have seven answers on the question. So it's unclear. They weren't too sure what the correct answer is. But it's a very good question. So here we have a klal, the Chachamim only have a right to make a gzeira de Rabbanon when there's something really to worry about. If you have a milsa de lo shchicha lo goza b'rabbon, if you have a farfetch chashash, oy, we're afraid that if you're going to require of people that they should eat shalashudis, someone's going to carry the matzahs to shul. Why should they carry the matzahs to shul? What's farfetch chashash? They know every week there's shalashudis and every week there's food. Nobody ever carries. What's the problem? So you don't have to worry about some farfetch chashash. Only if you have a chashash karer, you have a real chashash that there's something to worry about. If it's a farfetch thing, you're not worried. Or what happens if it's not farfetch? But the thing that you're afraid of is you're afraid that people are going to violate an aveira de rabbanon. Not that you're afraid they're going to violate an aveira de araisa, biblical violation. You're afraid if you leave everything the way it is, people are going to violate an aveira de rabbanon. We have to institute a gzeira to prevent people from violating an aveira de rabbanon. So that's considered a gzeira, shalol tzarif. That's insufficient need. You have to have, in order to be allowed to institute a gzeira de rabbanon, that it shouldn't be a violation of bal tosif, you have to have a real solid chashash, what to be worried about. If they're afraid that once in a yovel someone's going to do an avera, that's a milsa de rosh chiyachal gozber rabban. We have no right to be gozer. If they're making gzeira on a far-fetched chashash, it's an issue of baltesis between the goyim themselves. They had no right to make such gzeira. Or they only have a right to make gzeira if they're afraid people will violate an avera, their eyes. There's some, what to worry about. But if you're only afraid of gzeira ligzeira, you want to make a gzeira de rabbanon to prevent people from violating a different issue de rabbanon, that's considered insufficient need. And if they'll institute such a gzeira, it'll be a violation of baltos. So that's Abai's kasha against Rav Yosef. In fact, Abai Akasha, how can you tell me that peiros anoshrim, if the fruits fell down from the tree by themselves in the middle of Shabbos or Yom Tov, you're forbidden to eat the fruit lest you'll get carried away with yourself and you'll pluck off some more fruits from the tree. So you're forbidding the fellow from eating the beitzah shenolda, lest, if you'll allow beitzah shenolda, people will think that they're allowed to eat the peiros that fell down, which is really mutter. But we don't want them to do that midrabbanan because they may climb up and break off from the branch. The Gemara says, no, we didn't. Rav Yosef didn't mean to say that they instituted a later gzeira forbidding people from eating the beitz of shenolda lest they'll go and violate the gzeira of teres anoshrim. What it rather means is when they initially instituted the gzeira derabbanan of teres anoshrim, the fruits that fall down from the tree are forbidden to be eaten. Anything that looks like peiros anoshrim was included, even though the hashash of climbing up and breaking off the fruit doesn't apply. And therefore, it even the original gzeira derabbanan against peiros anoshrim even included a beitz shenolda. That's how Rav Yosef touches up his interpretation, his pshat. And the final pshat was Rav Yitzchok, along the same lines as Rav Yosef. It's not that the beitz shenolda is part of the gzeira derabbanan of peiros anoshrim, the fruits that fall down from the tree, it's also to eat. Which is rather part of a different gzeira, very similar though, part of a different gzeira. There is a din that on Shabbos and Yom Tov you're not allowed to squeeze out fruits in order to get the juice. Every Yom Tov people ask the same shalot. They know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to squeeze out the oranges to make orange juice, you're not allowed to squeeze out the lemon and the tea. What about on Yom Tov Oichal Nefesh? So the answer is, it's on the first daf here, the first sugya in Beitza. It says explicitly that you're not allowed to squeeze out the fruits even on Yom Tov. I should be mutter, oichal nefesh, so that's what Tesis is. This big Tesis over here, Dab Gimel Menalot, is bothered with that kasha, we'll have to discuss it a little bit. So the Gemara makes it clear that you're not permitted to squeeze out juice on Yom Tov, just like you're not allowed to squeeze out juice on Shabbos. And this gzeira, this iser of squeezing out, apparently was an iser that people used to violate. So in order to be mechazik this iser, especially on Yom Tov, people would squeeze out things like today. All about, even the people who know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to squeeze out on Yom Tov, more people squeeze out fruits. So in order to strengthen this iser of squeezing out fruits, they made a further gzeira in order to give it the teeth. So they said, and even, let's say, if you cut up a grapefruit, and when you cut up a grapefruit, you cut up a lemon, and you take a piece of lemon, you put it into the cup of tea, you don't squeeze it out. So that's okay, as long as you don't squeeze out. But what do you do with the juice on the plate when you cut up the grapefruit or the lemon? There's going to be a little juice there. Can you drink that juice? You didn't violate anything. That juice oozed out by itself. When you were cutting, by the slight pressure, the juice came out. So that's called mashkin shezavu. The juice oozed out by itself. Are you permitted to drink the mashkin shezavu? So the Mishnah has a masech HaShabbos, there's a gzeira derabbanan. Mashkin shezavu, me'aleihem, the juice that came out from the fruits or the vegetables, even though it oozed out by itself, it's forbidden to drink that juice because of a gzeira shema yischot. We want to prevent people from squeezing out the juice intentionally, so we say that even if it oozed out by itself, it's also aser to give chizuk to this din. So Rabbi Yitzchok claims that that's the gzeira derabbanan over here. The beitz shenolda was part of that gzeira of mashkin shezov. Then the Gemara goes into a detailed discussion over here. What is the slight difference between Rabbi Yosef as opposed to Rabbi Yitzchok? Rabbi Yosef says that the beitz shenolda is part of the gzeira derabbanan of peiros anoshrim, and Rabbi Yitzchok says no, it's part of the gzeira derabbanan of mashkin shezov. So the Gemara says that, well, it's not really a mashke, a beitz is not really a mashke, it's really an oichel. Why is it not a mashke? It's very, very liquidy. A raw egg it's not a hard-boiled egg, it's a raw egg. The raw egg is liquidy, but it doesn't matter, it's still not, the operating point out, it's still not a mashke. A mashke doesn't mean liquidy versus, you don't drink an egg when you're thirsty. The definition of a mashke means a beverage. It doesn't mean a liquidy thing. Right. Since you're really going to eat the egg, you're not going to drink it as a beverage when you're thirsty. So even when it's raw, it's considered an oichel. It's considered an oichel. You see from this gemara, not a mashke. On Yom Kippur, take for example, on Yom Kippur, there is a difference lahalacha between eating ochlim and eating mashtim. That if you eat ochlim on Yom Kippur, they're both forbidden, but there's a different shear. How much do you have to eat in order to violate the full aveir? So if you're eating an ochel, then the Mishnah says in Yume, the last part in Yume, that if you eat kikosevis hagasa, the size of a big date, a big fat date, that's the full kashir, that's the full violation of the yisur. If you're drinking a mashke, then the shear is melo lugma, much smaller shear, the amount of mashke that you would hold on one side of the mouth. So the Maharam Shik has a tshuva l'halacha. What about the chazanim who drink raw eggs on Yom Kippur? How much of a raw egg do they have? What size raw egg do they have to eat on Yom Kippur? How much of a raw egg? You're not allowed to. So how much of a raw egg do you have to drink in order to violate the full aveira of eating on Yom Kippur? Do you treat the raw egg like an ochel, so you need a kosevis hagasa? Or do you treat it like a mashke because it's liquidy, so if you have a melad lugma, it's enough? But the Maharam Shik writes in the tshuva that it has the status of an ochel. It's not considered a mashke. So later, Achrayim point out that it's a mefurushi gemara. He quotes this gemara also. Made a mistake. Maharam Shik himself quotes this gemara. Then others point out independently also, without referring to the Maharam Shik. They also point out that this gemara says beferish like that. That raw eggs are considered ochel. It's not considered mashke. So that's why the gemara says, that's why Rabbi Yosef felt that it's better to assume that the Beitza Shenolda should really fall under the Gzera de Rabbanon of Peris and Oshrim and not fall under the Mashke Shezobo, has nothing to do with the Mashke. And Rabbi Yitzchok holds that even though Beitza Shenolda is an Oichel, it's not a Mashke, but he feels, the Gemara explains, he feels that it's better to say that it belongs to the category of the Gzera of Mashke Shezobo, because when you have a fruit, you have the juices absorbed inside the fruit, and then when you squeeze out, let's say it oozes out by itself, or you squeeze out the juice, so the juice comes from the inside and it goes out from the inside of the lemon or the inside of the grapefruit, and then it oozes out. So the same is true regarding the Beitza Shenolda. The Beitza was inside the Tanagolus, inside the B'nei Me'ayim of the hen, and then it comes out of the goof of the hen, it gets exposed to the outside. And this is in contrast to the situation of Peris HaNoshrim, where the fruit is standing exposed on the tree, it's megula. The only thing is that it's attached, and you're not allowed to rip it off. And then it falls off by itself, so the Chachamim forbid you from eating the Peris HaNoshrim, even though you didn't rip it off. So there, the fruit was megula the whole time. How can you compare a Beitza Shenolda to the case of Peris HaNoshrim? It's more comparable, that's what Rav Yitzchok says, it's more comparable to the case of Mashke Shezobah because it was mechusa. Just like by the Mashke Shezobah, the juice was absorbed inside the lemon and inside the grapefruit. So here too, the Beitza is absorbed inside the body of the Tanagot. So it's a machlokes, a detailed machlokes between basically Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yitzchok, the same thing. They say that Beitza Shenolda, B'Shabbos B'Yontif, falls under a certain Gzeira de Rabbanon, and that's why you're not allowed to eat it. Which Gzeira de Rabbanon? So they argue about the details. Is it this Gzeira, or is it that Gzeira? And the other Amorim, what do the first two Amorim think? Rav Nachman and Rabbi, they think it doesn't fall under either the Gzeira Peris HaNoshim nor under the Gzeira Mashkin Shezovu. What has it got to do with Peris? It's neither Peris HaNoshim nor Mashkin Shezovu. The Chachamim made a separate Gzeira by Mashkin Shezovu and a separate Gzeira Peris HaNoshim. It has nothing to do with the Beitza Shenolda. No malacha was done over here. There is an interesting discussion in the Ramban, in his commentary on the bottom of the Rif, later in the third parak in Maseches Beitza. The third parak in Beitza starts off, that's on that Chav Gimel and Beis, Ein Sodim Dogim Min HaBibrin B'Yontif. You're forbidden to go hunting, you're not allowed to go catch fish from the ponds. A bibr is a pond on Yontif. So Rashi and Tosfos ask right away on the Mishnah on Chav Gimel and Beis, why is it forbidden to go fishing on Yontif? Why not consider it Ochel Nefesh? On Shabbos we understand that Seder is forbidden to catch a fish, and Atilas Neshama is forbidden to catch the fish and leave it in the water is a violation of Seder. You catch the fish and take it out of the water, it's going to die, so that's in addition to the violation of Seder, it's a violation of Atilas Neshama. Let's say there's an animal running around in the forest, and I take a gun and I shoot the animal. So then it's a double violation. Number one, it's Seder, the animal is no longer roaming around. And number two, it's Atilas Neshama, the animal is dead. If I set a trap and I catch the wild animal and it's still alive, then I've only violated the Yisr of Tzedo, and I haven't violated yet the Yisr of Netilas Hashem. But if I shoot the animal, then I violate both the Basachas. So on Shabbos, I understand why you're not allowed to go fishing and you're not allowed to go hunting. It's Netilas Hashem, and it's Tzedo Metalagud Hazam. But the Shabbos on Yontif, The Nari Yehuda has a famous tshuva where he says, if you go hunting and it's dangerous for you, you may break your limbs or the animal may get you. So then he says it's forbidden to go hunting, unless you're a hunter for parnasa. He says, if you do it for fun and you're putting yourself into sakana, let's say people ski for fun. So then, and people who ski usually, there's a high percentage of them, let's say 5-10% break a limb or something. So then he says it's forbidden, because you're not permitted to put your life into danger. But if that's what you do for a living, you have to go hunting for parnasa, then he says it's permissible. Why is it mutter for parnasa? You're allowed to violate an aver? So he says, no, there is a din that you're never permitted to put your life or your body, even just to break a limb, into sakana or suffix sakana. But it's only forbidden. It's only forbidden if it's a suffix that people are nervous about. Let's say it is a suffix sakana. If you drink tea, so you may get high blood pressure. Okay, so it's a far-fetched suffix sakana. I know a lot of people drink tea. They don't have high blood pressure. So you don't have to worry about such a suffix sakana that normal people are not nervous about. But what if it is a suffix sakana that people are nervous about? Then it's forbidden. But for parnasa purposes, it's understood that people don't worry. Because for parnasa, people do all kinds of things. Oh, and he quotes the pasuk, a love who knows say yes namsha. Pasuk that phrase is based on. The pasuk says, a love who knows say yes namsha. The pasuk says, biyomo titen schar. You have to pay the worker on the same day. Basically, you have a babysitter, or you have a guy who fix the refrigerator, or he fix the machine or something. Or the maid makes the beds and washes the dishes, whatever. So there's a din in the Torah. Biyomo titen schara. You have to pay the salary on the same day. You violate an aver if you wait till tomorrow. This din only applies to serious problems. It doesn't apply, let's say, if I buy a television, I don't pay on time. If I broke your window and I don't pay right away. If I stole your automobile and I crashed it up and I don't pay right away. I don't violate that din. It's a different. I violate Xeo, I violate other things, but I don't violate this din of Biyomo Titin Schar. It's a special din. Biyomo Titin Schar only applies to Schiris Perlim. So the Chumash has to give a rationale. Why? Why is it limited after to Schiris Perlim? So the Torah says, a love who knows say a snapsho. It's for that parnasa, for those dollars, for that amount of money that he agreed to put his life in danger. That's how the Gemara quotes a Sifrei. The Gemara quotes a Bryce and the Sifrei. And that pasuk interpreting a love who knows say yes not sure, he puts his nefesh, he puts his life into danger. People sometimes do all kinds of dangerous things. They drive, they fly airplanes, and they go hunting in order to make a parnas. So the shaila is, but how are you allowed to do that? You're not allowed to put your life into danger. So the answer is, it's not a 50-50 suffix sakana or more. If it would take it be 50-50 or more, then you're not allowed to do it even for the purpose of parnas. But meretach, it's less than a suffix ashoku. So the question is it, does it have the status of a suffix sakana or not? So that depends whether people are nervous or not. So when, with respect to parnas, it's minigoylem that people do things that are slightly dangerous for the purpose of parnas. So then it's muta, because for the purpose of parnas, people don't worry. But if it's not for the purpose of parnas, if you tell the boss, if the boss tells you in advance that he's not going
to...
Right. If he's Michael, sometimes no reason. Right. If he agrees in advance, not after he does the work, then he says, I'm not going to pay you till later. If he agrees in advance, or if it's understood in advance, then he's not going to pay him every day, then it's okay. But if it's not understood, then there is a serious din. Not only that, the Chafetz Chaim has a whole separate little sefer on this din, of paying on the same day. Apparently in Europe, they used to violate this din. Like he has a lot of Svarim on Lashon Hara, so he has about the women covering the hair. He also wrote a whole sefer because they violated that. So he has a whole sefer about the paying on the same day. It's more than a sefer. So he says if you pay by check, it's also no good. The person has a right to insist that he wants cash. Unless he wants cash for improper purposes, he doesn't want to declare it on that. That the Chafetz Chaim didn't know from these kunz. He says the din is that you're only yotzei if you pay in money. You have to pay kunz cases like that, in Bava Kama, in Bava Masra. You have to pay davke in cash. You can't pay him in other things. And if he says he wants cash and not check, also he says mikra, then you have to give him davke cash. Today it's probably different because today it's understood that you have to pay check in order to keep records. You should keep records. It's understood that didn't work in the front. So you want to know about hunting in the weekdays. So the poskim say that the Nari Yehuda is quoted in the Hilcha Shechita about hunting. So he says that if you put your life into your life or your limb into slight sakana, it's only permissible if you do it letzorach parnasa, because then it's understood that that's normal. People would do that. But if the fellow just does it for fun, like the princes used to do in Europe. They used to go hunting for fun, and used to break their arms and break their legs and whatever. But then he says, it's part of forbidden. But meretach, a person is hunting litzorach, because he needs the food. So then, litzorach panasa, litzorach achila, so then it's mutter to go hunting. So on the weekdays, you're allowed to go hunting. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to hunt because it's a malacha of tzedot, it's a malacha of nefilas neshama, when you're going to kill the fish. And on Yontif also, it's forbidden to hunt because of tzedot and because of nefilas neshama. So Rashi and Tosfos and all the Rishonim ask. Right, okay, okay. Right. So on Yontif, to kill the animal is mutter, but to hunt it is also. So that's what all the Rishonim ask. Why? Just like you're allowed to kill the animal. Right, then it's not safe.
So you're only configuring means that it still has the right to swim around, and I don't know which fish it's going to be.
Right.
That's
the idea. Or if there's only one fish, but it can swim the whole length of the whole pond, then it's not considered nitzor. Okay. It's not caught yet. But if it's a very small, if it's caught in a very small fish tank already, and it can't run away from you, you just stick your hand in and you catch it, then you're not violating tzedah. Yeah. So this is what all the Rishonim ask. Why is it forbidden to hunt on Yom Tov Tzorech HaNefesh? Why is it forbidden to squeeze out the juice on Yom Tov Tzorech HaNefesh? And why is it forbidden to rip off the fruits from the tree on Yom Tov? All this is Tzorech HaNefesh?
You just said of tzedah, that's because of Achor?
No, tzedah is one of the 39 malachas, a separate malacha. To hunt an animal on Shabbat and Yom Tov. On Yom Tov? It's a malacha. Same as Shabbos. So that's the kasha, but on Yom Tov you're permitted to shech the animal, so why aren't you permitted to hunt the animal? That's the kasha that all the Rishonim is. So Rashi gives an answer on the Mishnah Chav Gimel on the base. Rashi says the beginning of the third parak. Time of Mishum, the reason why you're not allowed to go hunting on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to squeeze out the juice, you're not allowed to pluck off the fruits from the tree. Time of Mishum, the Efshe Me'er of Yom Tov. That the only malachas you're allowed to do on Yom Tov for the purpose of Ruach HaNefesh are such malachas that you couldn't have done on Erev Yom Tov. Namely, let's say, shchita. They didn't have any refrigeration, so they used to shech immediately before they were about to eat the food. So if you're going to shech on an Erev Yom Tov, chayish, we have to be worried about michma bisra. The meat is going to get spoiled. It's going to get ruined. Pen yischamem v'yatsriach. It's going to get spoiled if you leave it overnight. Avon tzeda, which is efshalat tzudim avod yom, v'yanachena bim v'tzudasa, you should have caught the animal on Erev Yom Tov, you should have plucked it off in the tree. On Erev Yom Tov, we should have squeezed out the juice on Erev Yom Tov, but it wouldn't get spoiled. So whatever malachas you could do on Erev Yom Tov, you're not permitted to do on Yom Tov. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos doesn't like Rashi. Tosfos on the beginning of the third parak asks, and Tosfos on Ardab presents the exact same kasha on Rashi. How can it be? We have a machlokes. Tosfos on Gimel Amud presents this. We have a machlokes later in the Mesifta. Here the Tosfos, if you look on Gimel Amud Aleph, it's all the way around 30 lines down. Oh, it's better to start from the bottom of the daf and go up. Instead of starting from the top.
In other words,
they just explained why you're not permitted to rip off the fruits on Yom Tov, and you're not permitted to squeeze out the juice on Yom Tov. Right. Whatever you could have done Erev Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. I mean, that's no malacha was done. The chicken lays the egg, whether it doesn't consult me whether he's going to lay the egg. No, we say the gzera the rabbanim applies to all cases. Right. Even though the reason for the gzera definitely doesn't apply. What are we afraid he's going to pull? He's going to yank the egg out from the hen? No one in his right mind ever does that. To pull the fruits off from the tree, yes, that we do all the time. So we don't allow you to eat the fruits that fell off on their own because of the gzera that you may get carried away with yourself and pull the fruits off. We don't allow you to drink the juice that oozed out by itself, because it may get carried away and squeeze it out on your own. But here, it's not that we're afraid he's going to yank out the egg from inside of the hen. It's just that it's part of the same gzera. Even though the reason for the gzera certainly doesn't apply, the gzera applies. That's a Rav Yosef felt, and that's a Rav Yitzchok felt. But here the question is, why is it forbidden to hunt on Yom Tov? Why is it forbidden to squeeze the juice? Why is it forbidden to rip off the pears? Why not consider it? So Rashi gave the answer, that whatever is Epshalasis in Bod Yom, you're not permitted to do on Yom Tov. Where did Rashi get this idea from? That only what you were unable to do on Erev Yom Tov. So it's based on a Gemara. Tosfos quotes the Gemara, where it has in parentheses in the Tosfos, about 8 lines from the end of the Tosfos, it has in parentheses the Kamon, Chav Ches on the base. So they refer you to a Gemara, who v'loy machshira, there is a dispute later on Daf Chav Ches between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. What exactly are you allowed to do on Yontif for the purpose of Oichal Nefesh? So let's say I took, on Yontif I'm interested in having a hot cup of coffee. So I take the kettle and I fill it up with water under the faucet, and I take the water and I put it on the fire, and I turn on the fire. You're not allowed to strike a match, that's a Mishnah later, that's generally assumed to be any Siddur Rabbanan. You're allowed to strike a match. But if the pilot light is on anyway, and I turn on the fire, I turn on the gas, so the gas is lit from the pilot light, so Havara, you're permitted to do Havara, and I do Bishur, that's permitted on Yom. So the question is, what if the kettle is broken? In order to cook my water, I have to fix the kettle. So I have to take a hammer and bang the kettle a little bit. Let's say the nozzle is great, so you can't get, or the tap doesn't open, whatever. So in order to be able to fill the kettle full of water, I have to start banging the kettle. The kettle is mamish broken, and it's makama patish. To fix the broken plea is makama patish. Let's say I have this delicious steak that I'm about to eat, whatever chicken, whatever I'm about to eat on Yom Tov, and the knife is broken and the fork is broken, so I take the fork that's twisted backwards and I twist it straight. And the knife is dull, it doesn't... So I sharpen the knife. So if the sharpen the knife is a Mishnah later, a mashkizim was a sakin biyantik, that's a violation of makar bapakish. So if the fork is twisted and I straighten it out, so it means I had a broken fork and now I fixed the fork. So that's a violation of makar bapakish. But what if I don't have any other fork? I don't have any other knife. And the only way for me, I don't want to eat with my fingers. We're living in the 20th century. He wants to eat with the fork, with the knife. He wants to warm up the water in the kettle. So is the heter oichal nefesh so encompassing? Is it so inclusive that you're even permitted to fix the broken fork and the broken knife and the broken kettle? And he's saying no. So that's a machloekes hatam. That's called machshirei oichal nefesh. Machshirei oichal nefesh means to fix the pot or to fix the knife in order to be able to eat the food. So the beauty is of the opinion that that too is permissible. You're even allowed to fix the broken knife in the broken pot. And the Chachamim disagree and they say that you're not allowed. How do we pass on halacha l'maisa? So the Gemara says, the din is like Rabbi Yehuda halacha v'yein morin kein. The din is, strictly speaking, it's mutter, but you're not allowed to announce in public the din that it's mutter. If a person knows on his own that that's the halacha, so you're allowed to fix the broken knife, he's allowed to fix the broken pot. But if someone comes to ask a shayla, so you tell him, Yantif, you're not allowed to. You're not supposed to tell out the secret. But you're going to tell the people that they're allowed to fix broken forks and broken knives. You're going to start fixing the chairs and the tables and the automobiles and everything. So the Gemara says, halacha b'yein morin kein. You have such a concept in different places in the Gemara that even though the din is that something is mutter, the Chachamim recommend that we shouldn't be mefarsim. Such a concept. Such a concept. Okay. So the Gemara says...
We don't say that didn't buy it from Ledger.
No. Because we know that on a Bris Milah they'll do it, and when there's no Bris Milah they won't be Mechal Shabbos. But here Yom Tov as it is weak. We know that people violate a lot of things on Yom Tov. They go far beyond what the Halacha allows. So the Chacham felt that even what the Din allows, we shouldn't allow. We have to limit what people do on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says on Daf Chav Ches and Beis that even if you follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that happens to be the way we pass in Mikra Din. The Machshir Eichel Nefesh are permitted on Yom Tov, even though the Din is Machshir and is Mutter. But we have a pasuk that limits it. It's only if it's EF Shalasas Mivod Yom. When did the fork and the knife or the kettle break? If the fork was broken since yesterday, and I went to the office on Erev Yom Tov, and I didn't bother to fix it, then it comes to the night of Yom Tov, I have no fork, I have no knife, I have no kettle. And if he would have stayed home, he could have fixed the fork and knife. He just didn't bother. He has no time during the weekdays. So then that's a machshir and she'ef shalasas mibod yom. He could have fixed it on the weekdays. Then even Rabbi Yehuda says it's forbidden min ha'Torah. It's also min ha'Torah to fix it on Yom Tov. The only time Rabbi Yehuda says it's permissible is if the fork broke on Yom Tov. Or the fork broke before, but he wasn't aware of the fact that it's broken. It was machshir and she'ef shalasas mibod yom. He just wasn't able to fix it before Yom Tov. Then and only then does Rabbi Yehuda say that you're permitted to fix. Even the Machshir Eichel Nefesh, even though it's not actual Eichel Nefesh, it's a step in advance. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're allowed to. Mikra Din, that's how we pass it. Halacha b'yein morin kein, for those who know the Din is that it's mutter. So Tosfos infers from that Gemara that the distinction between Ef Shalasas Mivod Yom and the Ef Shalasas Mivod Yom only applies in the area of Machshirin, to fix a broken knife or to fix a broken fork. But to cook the food, it would appear clearly from the Gemara that even if it was Efshel Asas and Bod Yom, even if you could have cooked all the food and baked all the bread on Erev Yontif, and you had refrigeration, it doesn't matter. It's still Mutter, Min HaTorah, and the Rabbanim to do everything on Yontif. That's Tosfos Tanya against Rashi. How can Rashi say? But the reason why it's forbidden to go hunting and to pluck off the pears from the tree and to squeeze out the juice is because Efshel Asas and Bod Yom, whatever else and you could have done on Erev Yontif, you're forbidden to do on Yontif, at Tosfos Akashi. But that distinction between Efshel Asas and the Efshel Asas is only in the area of Machshirin. That was itself a dispute whether you're allowed to fix the broken fork, the chlal. So we pass in Halacha V'Emorin Kain that you're allowed to, but that's only if you couldn't have done it with Bod Yom. But if it's Eichel Nefesh Mamish, that's a much better hatter than it, even if it's Efshel Asas and Bod Yom, it should also be Mutter. That's Tosfos Kashi. So some Rishonim say, I'm not the guitar. Some Rishonim say, it's not true. They say no, when the Gemara makes the distinction between Efshel Asas and the Efshel Asas, not it. You shouldn't say it's only limited to Machshirin. It's even in the area of Eichel Nefesh Mamish. I also distinguish, there is such a group of Rishonim. But Tosfos, all of that's the, you have the obscure Rishonim say that, who has the Rav Yor says that, Yor Zeruah, the Rishonim that they usually don't study in the Yeshivas. But the regular standard Rishonim that we usually use, Rashi, Tosfos, the Rashbo, the Ran, the regular Rishonim, they hold that that's wrong. They hold that the distinction between Efshel Asas and Bod Yom and Efshel is only in the area of Machshirin, has no application to Eichel Nefesh Mamish. So they ask, what in the world is Rashi talking about? The Rashi says, whatever was Efshel Asas and Bod Yom, you're not allowed to do on Yom. So the standard answer is... That's a question, how do you define Machshirin? What's the definition of Machshirin? So usually people used to give one definition, and the Poskim explained that it's wrong. The standard definition that everybody usually gives is it depends what the Malach is being done to. When you cook food, or you bake cake or cookies, Malach is being done to the food. And you shech the behemoth, the malach is being done to the animal that you're going to eat. So whenever the malach is being done to the food, we call that Eichel Nefesh. Whenever the malach is done to the fork or the knife, or to the pot, that we call Machshir. That was always generally accepted as the standard definition. Some Achrenim have that definition. So the later Achrenim say that that's not correct. It's 100% not correct. Let's say when you turn on the fire, when you turn on the gas range and the fire catches flame from the pilot light, so the malach is done to the gas, you're not giving it to gas, and nobody says that's called machshir, that's called Eichel Nefesh Mamish. Or for example, the Gemara talks later that you want to shech the behemoth, you want to shech the chicken on Yontif. So you have to get a shechet and a knife and a chicken in one place. What if the knife is in one place, the shechet is in another place, and the chicken is over here? So the Gemara says, so you carry whatever you have to carry. So the Gemara says, if you want, you can carry the knife to the chicken. There's no air. And they carry him. The carry on Yontif is also forbidden. Unless it's Eichel Nefesh or something. Well, only if you have a Tzorach HaYom Tzas. You have to have a Tzorach HaYom Tzas. You're going to learn that. Only if you have to have a Tzorach. But Shalom HaTzorach Klal, you're not allowed to carry. So the Gemara has a whole discussion of Machlokes B'Sham and B'Sil. Do we recommend you should carry it? The Sheikh is an old man and he can't carry it. He can't walk. So would we prefer, would we recommend to carry the Sheikh, or would we recommend to carry the knife with the behemoth to the sheikh? So there's a whole discussion, what do you do? So the Ramban quotes out on that Gemara that this is not Machshir Eichel Nefesh, this is Eichel Nefesh Mamish. How is it Eichel Nefesh Mamish? If you carry the chicken, I understand you're carrying the food that you're ultimately going to eat, but if you carry the knife, or you carry the sheikh, then the malach is not being done to the food, the malach is being done to something extraneous. So obviously it seems in the Gemara that that's not the correct definition. In fact, there's a sefer that's entitled Malachas Yontif. Malachas Yontif was written by a great Rav who died before the war by the name of Rav Moshe Sokolovsky. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva in Brisk. There was a Yeshiva in Brisk. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the Rav in Brisk. He wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin Yeshiva until it closed down. They wanted to introduce at least 2 hours of secular studies a week. So the Rosh Yeshiva said he's going to close the Yeshiva rather than introduce. What they want to introduce? That they should know how to write Russian. They should know how to multiply and divide. Whatever, to know a little arithmetic, elementary arithmetic, and just to teach the Russian language, how to read and write the Russian. So the Netziv, that's Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, married his granddaughter. So the Netziv was then the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the father of Rav Meir Bar Ilan. So he said, better to close down the Yeshiva. So then when Rav Chaim lost his job, the Yeshiva closed down and lost his job. So then it became, he was appointed the Rav in Brisk, but he wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva in Brisk. There was a Yeshiva in Brisk. It was headed by a Rav, Rav Moshe Sokolovsky, somebody else. He had learned by Rav Chaim.
Remember Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, but he wasn't, it had nothing to do with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He had a yeshiva. So this Rav Moshe Sokolovsky wrote two svaros. So he wrote one sefer that's only dedicated to Melechus Yontif. That's the title of the book, and he quotes every single source that there is to quote under the sun in existence on Oichal Nefesh and Mitoich and Machshirim. It's a whole long book. You have to have a lot of gedul to sit and read and read and read. He quotes so much. So full of source material, quotes everything that there is to say. So in his book he points out this error that people, he quotes which Achrenim thought like that, that it was generally assumed that the definition of Oichal Nefesh is when the Melechus is done to the food that you're going to eat. And the definition of Machshivin is when the Melech is done to the fork, to the knife, something other than the food. He shows from his mother that that's not correct, that sometimes you're doing the Melech to the knife, and it's still called Oichal Nefesh Mamish. So how do you determine whether it's Oichal Nefesh or Machshivin? So he says, he quotes from Achrayim who say that the definition runs as follows. Whenever the Melech that you do only leads up to eating the food on Yom Tov, then it's called Oichal Nefesh Mamish. Why am I carrying the Sheikhet to this house or carrying the knife to that house? Why? I need the knife over there. It's a Sheikhet's knife. He's only going to use it to shech the bame, and then after Yom Tov he's going to have to take it back to the other place, to the slaughterhouse. He's not going to use it in this house for any other purpose. But let's say the shechet, he's going to carry the shechet to this house in order to shech the chicken or the bame. The shechet wants to be here. He doesn't want to be here. He's only here for the purpose of shechting. We're going to have to carry him back on Yom Tov, after Yom Tov, whenever. So whenever the malacha that you're doing is only going to lead up to Oichal Nefesh today, that's called Oichal Nefesh Mamish. Let's say I turn on the fire. So why do I turn on the fire? I'm interested. After Yom Tov is over, I'm going to turn off the fire. It's not that I need a fire, so I turn on the fire on Yom Tov, let's say 11 o'clock in the morning on Yom Tov, I turn on the fire because I'm going to use this fire to cook some food on Matzoh Yom Tov. The minute we say Havdalah Matzoh Yom Tov, we're going to turn off the fire. Then we want to cook again, we'll turn on the fire again later. So the turning on the fire is only going to lead up, is only for the purpose of cooking the food. Hashem came fixing of the broken fork. Once I straighten out the fork and once I sharpen the knife, once I fix the kettle, I'm going to use that fork, knife and kettle not only on Yom Tov. I'm going to use it all week long and the rest of the kettle I'll till it breaks again. I don't have to fix it again. So whenever the results of the malacha are lasting, even past Yom Tov, even after Yom Tov, and my intention of fixing it is not only for the immediate use on Yom Tov, but to last even after Yom Tov, then it's called Machshir Eichal Nefesh. That's not called Eichal Nefesh, it's called Machshir. That's permissible. That's another thing. That if I have a big piece of meat, a big piece of chicken, or let's say I'm only interested in drinking one cup of tea on Yom Tov, so I'm committed l'chatchila to hold the kettle under the faucet till, let's say I want to drink one cup of tea on Yom Tov, and I want to drink a lot of tea after Yom Tov is over. So I'm permitted to hold the kettle under the faucet on Yom Tov till it fills up to the top, and then put the whole kettle on top of the water. So why not on top of the fire? So why not say that all I need is the water for Yom Tov? The water from Mitzvah Yom Tov is not needed for today. Why isn't that a violation of Melacha? No, but Hoyel is also in the Rabbah. Hoyel is also in the Rabbah. So the Gemara says that the special din that on Yom Tov, Marbe Bishurim is permissible. If, let's say, I have a pot that I have on the fire, and the pot is already on the fire, and then I take one piece of chicken and I put it in, another piece of chicken I put it in, another piece and I put it in, and every time I put in another piece of chicken in the pot, another piece of meat or something, that's an act of bishul. Then you have to stop once you've reached the amount of food that you think you're going to use on Yom Tov. You don't have to be skimpy. Let's say someone may want a second portion, someone may want the extra, whatever. So you put in as much for sure that you, let's say you're going to bake cookies on Yom Tov because you're going to have guests. So let's say you expect to have 5 guests are coming over, and each one is going to eat maximum 10 cookies. So you're only allowed to bake 50 cookies. That's all. Doesn't look nice. You put cookies on the table, they're going to eat up. They don't leave the old maid. They're going to eat up the last cookie. So you're permitted, so the Ramban says, you're permitted to cook a few extra cookies, to bake a few extra cookies, because it doesn't look nice if you're skimpy. You're only allowed to bake as much as you need. But if you have one chicken, and you put the whole piece of chicken in at one time on top of the fire, it's one act of bishul. It's not many acts of bishul. Or if the pot is not on the fire, the pot is on the sink, and then I put all the pieces in, and then when I put the pot on top of the fire, it's one act of bishul and all of the chicken in the pot. So then the Gemara has a special din on Yud Zayinim and Aleph. The Gemara says that on Yom Tov, once you have a heter Oichal Nefesh on part of the pot, a part of the kettle, then laharbos bishurim is mutter, even lachatchila, knowing that you plan to use the rest on the Toy Shop. Yeah.
The act of
eating and taking, those are different malachas. Right, that's why that's a machlokes in the Gemara. The Gemara explains that's a different heter. in the days of the Gemara, they didn't put all of the bread on one thing and put it in. They used to put a bread, a loaf of bread on the floor of the oven, then on this side, there would be madbikid mamash on this side, then on that side, then on the back, and then on the top. And everything would be baking while it's attached to the oven. Then when it would be finished baking, they would have to scrape it off fast before it starts to burn. That's the Riddiyas HaPas. That's what they forbid with the Rabbanon. Riddiyas HaPas is not a malach at all. And I tell you, it's not a malach. The Rabbanon is also not a malach. But they forbid it with the Rabbanon, like Zerah, because it's like Misak and Eichon. Because if you don't scrape it off, it's going to burn. So the Gemara says, there's a machlekes HaTanan, we passed in the Ranyantif, it's even permissible to knead separate loaves of bread, even though the kneading Elisha is a separate malach, and the putting it into the oven, each one is put in separately on this side and that side and top and in the back and so on. Each one is a separate act of avatiya. Nevertheless, that's all mutta because you want the challah that you're going to eat. I'm only going to eat, let's say, one challah, two challahs on yom. I'm going to have an oven full of challahs. I know the amazing in the stuff and I'm baking five challahs or ten challahs. Loads of extra challahs on yom, which I don't plan to eat today. So what in the world is it doing for? Just in order to save himself time after yom is over. So that's his reason that it's forbidden. He's doing malach on yom. From a Toyam, he's not allowed. The Gemara says that his intention, in addition to that, is also that the bread that he eats on Yom Tov should taste better, because the Gemara says that hapas, the bread, tastes better, hapas nefes yofa b'zman shehatana molei. When the oven is more full, and all of the heat is more concentrated inside the oven, because every time you put in a challah on the walls, and on the top, and on the bottom, and on the back, so there's less avir, there's less empty space there, then the heat is going to be more concentrated, so the bread that you're going to eat today is going to be tastier. But then the Gemara says it's permissible to do a whole separate malacha of baking the other challahs and eating the other challahs in order that the challahs that you do eat should taste better. Hoil is a different. Hoil is a different din. Hoil is only mutam and atari and asam the rabbanan. Sure, hoil is asam the rabbanan. The Gemara has a machlokes, that's what we mentioned briefly. This, the Gemara has a machlokes between Rabbi and Rav Chisda about this. How do you label, how do you determine whether any given situation is a heter or a nefesh or not? So if you cook food on Yom Tov, and you plan to eat that food, or you bake cookies, or you bake bread, and you plan to eat it on Yom Tov, that's a nefesh mamash. What if he cooks food, or he bakes bread, and he plans to eat it on Matzor Yom Tov? He absolutely does not plan to eat it on Yom Tov. But theoretically, there exists the possibility of eating it on Yom Tov. And even though he already finished eating, all of his children ate already, they were platzing. Theoretically, so let's say it's Yom Tov in the afternoon, they already finished eating at 1 o'clock, there may be other people, and now he's cooking a fleshed meal. They're not going to, they just ate fleshed. They're not going to eat fleshed again. Yom Tov is going to be over in another 2 hours. They're not going to eat. So the Gemara says if he lives in a community where there are a lot of other Jews, if he lives in Monticello and there are no other Jews around or something, there's no one else around, and he cooks food on Yom Tov in the afternoon, and they've already finished eating, so there's no one to eat it. So that's a malacha. No doubt about it. He violated malachas Yom Tov. But if he lives in New York City, there are millions of Jews here. Even though he ate, there exists a theoretical possibility that other Jews may want to come. He may invite them, and they didn't eat yet. So they may want to eat up all the food. So the theoretical possibility of having all the food eaten up on Yom Tov, according to Rabbi holds that takes off the Yisur Deraisa of cooking food on Yom Tov. That it's mutam and atar to cook food, even though you don't plan to eat it on Yom Tov, because of the theoretical possibility that it could be eaten on Yom Tov. Now, Chizda disagrees himself. Chizda said that you have to have kavanas agabra at the time that he cooks it. He has to have a mind to eat it on Yom Tov. But even Rabbi, who says that it's mutam and atayra, admits that it's forbidden to the Rabban. So the Gemara asks that question. The Gemara himself asks that question. So the Gemara says, if you hold like Rabbi, that if you cook on Yom Tov, and the food could have been eaten up on Yom Tov, that's already you have to work on Avjina, you don't plan to eat it on Yom Tov. So and it's only forbidden to the Rabbanan to cook on Yom Tov, planning to eat it after Yom Tov. So then, the Sisa the Rabbanan was listed in Makam Mitzvah. So we allow you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Make an Erev Shilin, and you allow to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. But if you follow the opinion of Rav Chisda, the Gemara asks, that if you cook on Yom Tov, you don't plan to eat it today, that's a biblical violation, that's an Issa Deraisa. So the Gemara asks, how can you allow it on the Erev Shilin? So the Gemara answers that according to Rav Chisda, it's Tzorchei Shabbos, Nasim b'Yom Tov. If you're permitted, Menatera, to cook food on Yom Tov, not only for that day Yom Tov, you're permitted to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos that comes to mind. But that's Mutam Menatera, that we say that Shabbos b'Yom Tov. Smukham Zolazeh constitute one hemshech, and it's like cooking today, I'm going to ask to eat today. But tomorrow is a hemshech, so in our third, there's no need for an Erev Tavshilin, and the whole requirement for Erev Tavshilin is clearly only the Rabbanim, right? There's no possible in the Chumash about Erev Tavshilin. So the Erev Tavshilin is only needed with the Rabbanim, and in our third, you're permitted to cook on Yom Tov Shabbos even without an Erev Tavshilin. So Rabbi says it's permissible to cook in our third because of Hoil, since theoretically all the food could have been eaten up on Yom Tov, so it's Mutam in our third, and our Chizda doesn't believe in Hoil. So he says that the reason why he permitted to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, but not Torah, without the Erev Hashem, is because Torah is Shabbos, not only Yom Tov. We consider Shabbos a hemshech of Yom Tov, so you're cooking today, for today. Right, Rashi and the Ramban say there I'm sochem, that Rav Chisda's opinion that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos when they're next to each other is because he thinks that it's one long hemshech of Kedusha Achas. So therefore it should follow the Gemara's going to pass in and dates on the next half, that it's not Kedusha Achas. The Gemara says there's a machloekes satanoim and eilvin and datesim, and we have Shabbos next to Yom Tov, do we say that it's one long hemshech of one Kedusha for 48 hours? Or do we say no, it's a separate Kedusha for Shabbos and a separate Kedusha for Yom Tov. So since we pass in halacha on ours to state Kedushas, so we have to reject our Chisda's opinion. As according to Rashi and Rambam, you have to reject it. Rambam writes, you have to reject Rav Chisda's opinion. Because Rav Chisda's view that Tzorchei Shabbos, Nasa B'Yom Tov, we've got to cook today for tomorrow, because tomorrow is a Hemshech Tinnit Kedushas HaYom, today, and we don't pass them like that. Other Bishayim hold that that's not the Pshat, that it's not based on the Kedusha Achas, so therefore they consider a possibility of passing like Rav Chisda.
And if you want to walk
on Shabbat, I'm going to get one area. Right, that's the Lachlai. Right, and Yom Tov falls out on Friday or on Sunday, so you have two days, one next to the other, so can you make a separate Erev Tchumen for Yom Tov and a separate Erev Tchumen for Shabbos? And they say, no, it's considered like one long Hemshech of the Kedushas HaYom for 48 hours, and either Erev Tchumen is to the right or the Erev Tchumen is to the left. You can't have an Erev Tchumen for half of Shabbos in one direction and another Erev Tchumen in the other direction for the other half of Shabbos. You have to have one Tchum Shabbos for all Shabbos and for all Yom Tov. So that's the original Machlokes HaTanaim and Erev, where the Shabbos for Yom Tov that are next to each other constitute one long Kedusha Sayom, that's called Kedusha Achas. And he said, no, there are Shtei Kedushas, that there's one Kedusha on the one day and one Kedusha on the other day. And the Gemara said that we pass in Halacha L'maaseh, there are Shtei Kedushas. So the Ramban writes himself that since we pass in Shtei Kedushas, he cannot possibly adopt the opinion of Rav Chisda. His idea that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, Tzorchei Shabbos, now on Yom Tov, that means that it's called Kedusha Achas. But since we pass the Shtei Kedushas, we have to follow the view of Rabbah that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos is based on oil, since theoretically guests still come with it. But that's what an author to cook on Yom Tov, even though you don't have a line to on Yom Tov. You have a parish in line tomorrow. So Tony also made the Rabbanon to rely on her, and the Makkah Mitzvah, in order to cook the Shabbat, they lifted the Yisrael Rabbanon. So again, we have the difficult Rashi. Lachshe is to prepare something for the Yom Tov. Simple translation means the way it's usually assumed, that to fit the broken knife or the broken fork, in order to get the food, the Yom Tov is once removed, one step removed. That's called Lachshe Lachayot. To cook the food itself is real Yom Tov. To fix the knife is one step away from the food itself, that's called Mashir. That is only the traditional interpretation of the distinction, but it's not exactly 100% correct. That's what he said. It makes a difference whether you're carrying the knife or you kick the knife. If you kick the knife, you're going to use it even after you're done. That's called Mashir. If you carry the knife, you're going to walk as not done to the food. That's called Berkel Nefesh Mamash. Then I don't consider one step removed from the food. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Acts right. When I put the food on top of the fire, and then it's going to cook. That's the act of Isha. So if I put all the food into the pot when it's not on the fire, and then I take the pot and I put it on top of the fire, so that's one act of Isha, but I'm doing the act of Isha for much more than I'm going to use today. So that's called Marga Vishir. I have a heifer on that fish, on a half a pot. I only have a small family. That heifer on a half a pot, the rest of the pot I'm going to use for tomorrow if the Yom Tov is over. So that's called Marga Vishir, that is Mutter. But if I take, let's say, the pot is already on the fire, and I take one piece of chicken, I put it in, so when I put the chicken in the pot on top of the fire, that's already the act of Bishul. I didn't finish.
very on the bottom of the Mogen Avraham, the Matza Shekel, it says, let's say the pot is not on the fire yet. So if I have separate pieces of chicken, I put one piece, another piece, another piece, and all I need are 5 pieces. On the bottom of the Mogen Avraham, the Matza Shekel, it says, let's say the pot is not on the fire yet. So if I have separate pieces of chicken, I put one piece, another piece, another piece, and all I need are 5 pieces, and I put in 25 pieces. Put on the lid, and I put the whole thing on top of the fire. So true, at the time that I put it on top of the fire, there's only one single act of bishul, and what I'm doing is only marba bishurim, I'm cooking the other 25 pieces, I've got the 5 pieces that I have a hechter on, and that's permissible. But before I got to do that, and I keep on putting one piece and another piece and another piece, that's an Isur of Hachonah. That's an Isur of Hachonah. When I put a raw chicken in and I don't plan to eat it today,
It's not a malacha, it's not an isa deraisa, but that's the isa derabbanan of hachana. But I'm going to put the whole pot on top of the fire. That's one malacha, one bishul. So that's marbi bishurim, it's heter. So I don't violate any aveir of malachas. But at the time that the pot is not on the fire, and I keep on piling in one piece and another piece and another piece, the additional pieces that I know bevadai I'm not going to eat on Yom Tov, that's an isa of hachana. So the Machta Shekel says it's only permissible to be marbi bishurim if it's one big chicken. I have one big chicken. All I need is two pieces. So instead of cutting off the two pieces, I can take the whole chicken and put it in. Or let's say I have in the freezer two pieces of meat. One is a gigantic piece of meat that'll be enough for today, tomorrow, and next week. And the other one is enough for today. So I don't have to take dafka, the small piece of meat, and put it. I can take out the big piece of meat. Then I'm going to have to take out a piece of meat anyway from the freezer. Then I'm going to have to start throwing on salt and pepper and flavoring, whatever. So it doesn't make a difference whether I take the big piece or the small piece. Because at the time I put it into the pot, it's one act of hachana, and I'm doing it for today. Then I'm going to throw the flavoring on top. It's one act of throwing, whether it's a small piece or a big piece. I go like this. There's no additional hachana. But if I'm going to put separate pieces, each time I put another piece, that's a violation of hachana. It wouldn't be a violation of malacha, it would be a violation of hachana. So again, we have this problematic Rashi. Rashi and many Rishonim, the Rambam. Rashi and many Rishonim say that the reason why you're not permitted to go hunting on Yom Tov, the reason why you're not permitted to pluck off the fruits on Yom Tov, the reason why you're not allowed to squeeze out the juice on Yom Tov is whatever malacha you could have done before Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. So Tosfos on Daf Gimel says that it can't be. Tosfos asks that this distinction between Efshel Lasas and Bod Yom, any Efshel Lasas and Bod Yom should only apply in the area of Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, fixing the broken knife, fixing the broken fork. But as far as the area of Ochel Nefesh proper, Tosfos claims, and that's what most of the Rishonim hold, that we don't distinguish between Efshel Lasas and Bod Yom as opposed to E Efshel Lasas and Bod Yom. So they don't understand the Rashi. So the Pnei Yoshua has a comment, a simple comment on the Rashi and Daf Kof Gimel. He says Tosfos is certainly right that Ochel Nefesh is Mutam and Atari even if it's Efshel Lasas and Bod Yom. But Rashi meant to say, it's awesome with the Rabbanon. On the level of the Raisa, Tosfos is right. The Ochel Nefesh is permitted on Yom Tov even if you could have just as well done it with Bod Yom. But on the level of the Rabbanon, Rashi learns the mission that it's forbidden. You're not allowed to cook anything on Yom Tov, even though it's Ochel Nefesh Mamish. If you could have cooked it on Erev Yom Tov, it would have tasted just as good. So you're not allowed to cook it on... So Tosfos rejects Rashi. Tosfos doesn't like that, to say that there's an Issa de Rabbanon. They don't see why they should have instituted such an Issa de Rabbanon. But in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah passes like Rashi. Right, so what do they do with the Mishnah? So that's why Tosfos has to give another palm. The Tosfos on Daf Gimel suggests the following reason. Maybe you're not allowed to go hunting on, you're not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov, because you may catch a treif of fish. You may catch a treif of fish, and that you're not allowed to eat. And that you're not allowed to eat a treif of fish. What are you going to do with the treif of fish? Give it to a goy. You're not allowed to do a malach on Yom Tov on behalf of a goy. Oh. So then the kasha will be, so what if there's only one fish in the pot? Or let's say, why are you forbidden to rip off the fruits from the tree? What is going to be a tray for fruit? I see the apple, what is it to be afraid of? Why is it forbidden? So that's why Taisa doesn't like that pshat. You're not allowed to go hunting because you may catch a non-kosher animal which you're not allowed to eat. It'll turn out that you had them heter rechal nefesh, they don't like that pshat. So they say, no, the real, here in our Taisa they say, and the first, the very wide line, and that gimel and aleph, they have the narrow lines and the wide lines and the very wide lines. From the very wide lines, on the first one they say, v'yesh omrim, and some interpret, the lekach, it's for this reason that ain't sudden, you're not allowed to go hunting, you're not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov. Shema yotze dogim temeyin, you may catch a tuna fish, you may catch a trefa fish, she'enam tzorah, that you're not allowed to eat, I'll give it to a goy, you're not allowed to go hunting on behalf of a goy. So Taisa says, it doesn't make any sense, and they give a whole fancy reason why. So therefore Taisa says, the only way out is based on Yerushalmi. They have on the second very wide line. Al Kain Pirush Abeinu Nisan Al Mikinun. That's why one of the Balei Atos explained that the reason why you're forbidden to do all these things is based on the Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi comments, you have a smichas ha-psukim in Parshas Bo. The Torah says, Ochel Nefesh is mutar on Yom Tov, v'achar sheyach ochel nefesh hu levado yiyosu lachem, right next to the Pasuk of making Shmura Matzah. Ushmartam es ha-matzah. So when do you have to start making the Shmura Matzah? So the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Mem, Omer Aleph, has a machlokas amara. One opinion in the Gemara is that you have to do Shmurim Mishas Kitzira. That's what we do. That when they harvest the grain, after harvested, having in mind that we're going to make matzah shel mitzvah with this grain. And you have to put it in sacks to make sure that it doesn't rain on the grain, kozman, that it's attached to the ground. It's highly, highly unlikely that it's going to turn into chametz. Theoretically, the Gemara says it is possible. The achmetz b'mechuber, it is theoretically possible that the grain should become chametz even while it's attached to the ground. But because it's so unlikely, so you don't have to worry about that. But after it's already cut off from the ground, it's more likely, it's more possible. So one opinion in the Gemara is that you have to have shmura m'shas kitzira. From the time that you harvest it, you have to have in mind that you're going to use it for matzah mitzvah. You have to put it in sacks that are waterproof and protected and make sure that it doesn't turn into chametz. And the other opinion, which is the more popular opinion in the Gemara, is that it's not necessary to have shmura mishas kitzira from the time that you harvest it, but it's sufficient if you have shmura mishas lisha from the time that you mix in the water in the flour. So if you pour in water and you let it sit, then it's going to turn into chametz. When you cut it off in the ground, yeah, if it rains and it's in a puddle and it sits there in the puddle, there's a chance that it may turn into chametz. But it's also unlikely that it's going to turn into chametz. Or they used, years ago, the Rosh says they used to have water mills, and they used to grind the grain and turn it into flour, and the water would be splashing. The river would be flowing and causing the milk to go, and the water would be splashing. So sometimes a little water would splash onto the flour. So there's what to worry about. But the Ikar Hashash of Shmur is Mishas Lisha. When you pour in the water, the maize would be miscavened into the flour. So that's when you have to watch. So that's the more popular opinion in the Gemara, that you only have to worry about Shmura Mishas Lisha. So even though we are Machmer today, and all the stores they sell the Shmura Matzah, Shmura means Mishin Shmura, Hen Shmura, and Shmura Mishas Kitzira, from the time of harvesting, but the Rishami says, and that's what many Rishami say also, Mi'ikar Adin, you don't really need Shmura Mishas Kitzira. It's only a Chumra Mi'ikar Adin. All the Matzahs that we have are Shmura Matzah. All the regular Matzahs are Shmura Matzah. But the Shmura Mishas Lisha, from the time that they mix the flour and the water, they have, the Mashgiach is there, and they have all the workers are Jewish in the plant. Everybody's watching to make sure that it doesn't turn into chametz, and they're going to use it for matzahs on Pesach. So Mikra Adin, all you need is Shmur Mishas Lisha. So Tesis quotes the Yerushalmi, that since these two psukim are written one next to the other, so we darshan smuchim. Just like the Shmartem es HaMatzos requires that you should have Shmur Matzah. Mishas Lisha, from the time that you pour the water into the flour, you should watch that it doesn't turn into chametz. So too, the Heter of Eichel Nefesh, that you're permitted to do malachas on yontov for the purpose of eating, only applies mishas lisha v'elach. From the time of kneading on yontov, you're not allowed to harvest grain, you're not allowed to grind the grain and make flour out of it. But if you have the flour already, you're permitted to do lisha, you're permitted to do afia, whatever malachas are closer to the final product, to the eating. Whatever malachas are normally done well in advance of eating, like the hunting, if a person wants to eat wild deer, let's say wants to eat deer's meat, for supper, so he doesn't go hunting 2 o'clock in the afternoon in order to eat the gizmo. He goes hunting a day or two in advance to make sure he's going to have such an animal. Or go fishing. So Tosis assumes also when a person wants that fish for supper, so he doesn't go hunting right now. He goes hunting well in advance. So whatever malachas are normally done well in advance of the meal, that doesn't have a heter over nefesh. Whatever is normally done immediately before the meal, so that has a heter over nefesh. And this is a major machlekes in the Rishonim. The Ran disagrees with the Ramban in the beginning of the third paragraph against Sadin, whether this limitation of Mishas Lisha V'Elech, is that on a level of Deraisa? Is that a Drasha Gemura mid Deraisa? Or is that only an Asmachta mid Rabban? The Yerushalmi has a Drasha, Vidarshim Smuchim. Yeah, but the Gemara says in the first paragraph in Yevamis, do you have the right to Darshan Smuchim or not? When you have two Psukim, when you have two Dinim written in the same Pasuk, that's called a Hekesh. When you have two Dinim in the same Pasuk, that's a Hekesh. You have two dinim written and two psukim, one next to the other. That's a machlekes of Yehuda and a Chachamim, machlekes Hatanoim, where the smuchim has the same two psukim next to each other, have the same status as two dinim in the same pasuk. Oloy darshin and smuchim. So we follow the view of the Rabban and the Rabbi Yehuda that you do not darshin smuchim except for chumish dvarim. At least take me more. The reishis shmois vayikra b'midbar. You don't darshin smuchim. You only darshin hekesh. If the two dinim are in the same pasuk, then you assume there's a relationship. Only in Chumash Dvarim, and this is in Shmos, and this is in Parshas Bo in Shmos. So that's why Mikra Adin, the Ran holds Mikra Adin, there is no drasha of smuchim in Chumash Shmos, because we follow the view of the Rabban and the Rabbi Yehuda, that Lo Darshin et smuchim except for Mishnah Torah. This is not Mishnah Torah.
How come Rabbi Yishmael doesn't get smuchim?
He doesn't have hekesh either. doesn't have a lot of things there. Doesn't have a lot of things. I don't know. A lot of good kashas. Rabbi Shmuel lists off only 13 minish alternative drashas per him in the Brice of Rabbi Shmuel before Baruch Shamar, and he's missing a lot of drashas. I don't know. He's missing a lot of things. I don't know why. There are expanded Brices that have many more than 13. But why did he leave out all these major drashas? So this is a major machlekes among the Rishonim, whether this limitation of Kodem Lisha is a limitation on a level of the Raisa or only on a level of the Rabbanon. The Ran says in the beginning of the third parak, he doesn't understand at all that this should be make sense on a level of the Raisa. This whole Yerushalmi is only on Asmachtim of the Rabbanon, and that's how the Rambam says, when I thought you can even go hunting on Yom Tov and you can pluck off the peiros and you can grind the grain, harvest the grain and grind the grain. But with the Rabbanon, they said, we're going to spend all day long harvesting grain, grinding grain. So there's not going to be any Yom Tov. So they forbid it with the Rabbanon. And the Ramban and Tosfos and Shabbos insist, no, that it's a limitation on the level of the rice. It's machlokes is whether this drush is a drush of Mura, or it's only an Asma. So now... Rambam might say, he'll spend all day long doing
the Rabbanon.
Right. There are different versions exactly. If you assume that it's only the Rabbanon, there are different versions as to what the nature of the Rabbanon is. So some say the nature of the Issa the Rabbanon was, if you allow him to get involved in this, these are malachas that are usually done. You don't harvest what you want to make supper. You don't only harvest the amount of grain. You don't only grind the amount of grain you want to make a loaf of bread. You harvest a lot and you grind a lot. So we're afraid, the Rambam writes, we're afraid he's going to harvest a lot and grind a lot and he's going to spend the whole day Shabbos. And others say it's like...
Same thing
is
that the last
time
was
Kumas,
you could have taken it off before, so you're
not
allowed to
do it,
but
how much
is
Chalav? Right. We're going to get to that, right? That comes up, Tata and Adab. So here the Mishnah discusses on the next Daf, in Perek Ein Sodin, and Daf Chob Dal and Aleph, there is a Mishnah. What if the fellow set up nets on Erev Yom Tov to catch the wild animals, or to catch the fish? And then he comes on Yom Tov and he sees that he caught, on Erev Yom Tov he knows that nothing was caught. He comes on Yom Tov, he sees that the net, a fish or a wild animal got caught on Yom Tov. So the Mishnah says that even though he didn't violate any Aveira at all, he's permitted. In Shabbos there's a machlekes of Shabbos b'Sil. Are you permitted to set up nets on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov? We pass like b'Sil. You're permitted to set up nets on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov. So he didn't violate anything. Even on Erev Shabbos he can do that. But still, if it comes that on Yom Tov the fish got caught, or the wild animal got caught, you're not permitted to eat that fish or that wild animal. You're not allowed to shecht it or eat it on Yom Tov. So Rashi and the Ramban want to know, what's wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do any aver. He's allowed to set the nets. Oh, so one pshat is that it's muktzah. If the food was muktzah, had no hachona. That's a simple pshat. And then the Ramban gives another pshat. He says, since a malacha occurred on Yom Tov over here, the malacha of tzedek occurred, you didn't do it. You didn't do anything Aveira. You set the nets on Erev Yom Tov, you're allowed to. You're even permitted to set nets on Erev Shabbos. But since the animal got caught on Yom Tov, so the tzedek occurred, so the Ramban writes in the Melchamas on the bottom of the Rish that that's part of the gzeira of Mashke Shezavu in Peres HaMoshim. There's a general gzeira, any malacha shenasis mi'eleho, not only if a Jew did a malacha or if a guy did a malacha on behalf of a Jew. Are you forbidden to be nene from it, even if the malacha happened by itself? The fruits fell off from the tree.
But if that's the case, the concept of Shabbos cloth is
that's a good kasha. That's the next step. We're going to get to that. It's mutta. The answer, I don't have enough time to explain it tonight, but the din is that it's mutta. You're allowed to read using the Shabbos cloth. The question is why, so we'll have to explain it next week. So the Ramban says that Teres HaNosh and Mashka Shezov, Rav Yitzchok and Rav Yosef think that these are two separate Zeris. And there's a machlokes of Yitzchok and Rav Yosef whether Beitza Shenolda falls under Gzeira A or Gzeira B. But he says the other Amoraim disagree with Rav Yitzchok and Rav Yosef. They hold that they're all wrong. There is no separate Gzeira Mashma Shezov and a separate Gzeira Peres HaNosh. This is one universal Gzeira. A malacha shenasis me'eleho, it's forbidden to be nene from that malacha. Even if the malacha happened by itself, you're not allowed to be nene from malacha. So even if the animal got caught by itself on Yom Tov, it's forbidden for you to eat that animal.
Here you're when you're cutting the lemon, you're doing the malacha. You're doing some kind of maisa.
No, but I was permitted to do it.
But
what I did,
Shabbos.
You can have a case of Mashkin Shazavu without cutting. I gave a case. He's cutting the lemon, he's cutting the grape. You can have a case where it was that by itself also. That's I have a ton of grapes and they're sitting on top, and the pressure of the upper grapes causes the juice to ooze out from the bottom grapes, and I want to drink the juice on Shabbos and Yontif. Oh, so the Ramban claims that that's included in this universal gzeira. No, there was a malach of the Tfilas Neshama or of Tzeda, but you didn't do it. It happened by itself. I mean, no person did, no human being did the malach. But the malach occurred by itself. The animal committed suicide. The animal jumped.
When I stood up in there, I caused it indirectly. If I didn't do it, I did it.
We'll have to discuss it. What use is it bringing children into the world who won't be religious? Yeshaya Navi says that's none of your business what's going to happen. My benefit is whatever you are obligated to do, you have to go fulfill it. Baruch Hashem told you to have children, it's your obligation to go married, to go get married and have children. It's none of your business what's going to be later. So the commentaries explain that the mitzvah piriribi only applies to men. There's a dispute in the Mishnah Yevamos whether women are also obligated in Piri B'Rivi or not. So he tells the women don't have a mitzvah for Piri B'Rivi. So she tainas lamaza anoichi. I want to have an abortion. I don't want to have this child. Because I see Baruch HaKadosh, this kid, this is a nutty, it's a great child. He has inclinations towards Avodah Zarah, inclinations towards learning. At the same time, she thought it was one child. So she didn't want to have the child, she wanted to have an abortion. So her taina was lamaza anoichi. I am a woman. Women are exempt from the mitzvah for Piri B'Rivi, so I do have the right to make a cheshbon. The only time you don't have a right to make a cheshbon in observing mitzvah sotera is if the Ribbono Shel Olam tells you, you are mechuyev to do this, so don't ask any kashas. You have to go do it like Avraham Avinu did by the Akedah. It absolutely didn't make any sense at all to him to go kill his one and only child. This child is supposed to carry over the tradition of Kedushas Yisrael, and then he's going to go shech the son Yitzchak, who's going to be Eis Kedushas Yisrael. So he didn't ask any kashas. He went ahead and he's about to do the Akedah till the Ribbono Shel Olam told him to stop at the last minute. But she says over here, I'm not obligated to do this. You want me to volunteer to do a mitzvah? So whenever you're not obligated to do it, then you have the right to make calculations and cheshbonos.